Alright, there's gotta be something on.
They say the word shit like 100 times.
Make the bully drink piss.
Whoa!
What is this exactly about?
Sean's parents are basically on the verge of a divorce.
We'll come back to bite them in the ass later.
I always wonder, like, why was it always that kid's problem?
Did you see that?
But I'm sure if I'm quite drunk enough to see Meet the Beatles.
Of course you didn't. Nobody saw it. You know why? Because no one saw this movie.
It's like Avenue Q, only worse.
Yeah, it was definitely a rental for me.
On 3D, plus the IMAX 3D, plus the other theater had it.
Which was not really that hard.
Wait, where did he come from?
Internet. One of those covers of the video store, you remember?
Oh, this is that movie? Yep, of course. Yep. What in the hell is this and why is it on my TV? Yeah, I'm gonna have to catch this from the beginning.
What am I watching?
I had the lamb. It was skewered. One sympathizes. Welcome to What Am I Watching? The Hollow Nine Network's movie podcast. Not necessarily bad movies, as we tend to pick a lot of awesome ones, like the one we've got tonight. I am Dave the Clone, one of the movie aficionados who will be guiding you on this tour. Joining me tonight is the other learned doctor of film and televisionography, Mr. Jonathan Morton Johnny Moe. How are you, sir? This is the first time we've podcasted in quite some time, since before the holidays.
I don't know what happened, but way too long. I'm very excited to record.
It's like we sent him off on a solo mission and he was lost for a while. We lost contact with the shuttle and now it came back. And we had to send out a 00 agent to find him. So we didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, so I'm going to start this podcast off by saying I don't watch movies really, and I was just blown away. So the movies I watch now are those kid movies like Big Hero 6 and pretty much the Star Wars.
Yeah, the Star Wars.
I don't have to say I'm not a geek anymore. I'm just
all
like,
of them, the Star Wars.
No, like Rogue One like was the last one. I saw Rogue One twice in the theaters, once with my buddies, once with my son. He loved it.
I still have not seen Rogue One, actually. Blasphemy as it is to admit that, or Doctor Strange.
The whole movie, I'm wondering where the sheep is from, and he's a prominent actor.
Well, he's also, isn't he Hannibal Lecter on that on the TV show? And I saw him in a movie called The Salvation, where he was opposite Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who from the other huge show out there right now, The Walking Dead, Mr. Negan himself, and he was avenging the murder. The rape murder of his wife and kid in like an old western town. And it's funny because watching both of those other things, I don't go, holy shit, it's Lashif. You know what I mean? And even though that's the thing I saw him as first, Lashif.
Such a unique face.
Lashif is also kind of such a unique kind of guy in my mind, as far as like villains go and as far as just a character in a movie goes. So he kind of sticks with me and just exists outside of even the actor who plays him. You know what I mean? Which is
100%
kind of crazy. So if by now you haven't figured it out, you're joining us for what is Johnny Moe's first viewing and my first time talking in depth about what we're going to call the beginning of New Bond and the beginning of our Bond binge as we delve into the Daniel Craig era of Ian Fleming's 007 James Bond in Casino Royale. 2006 is, I believe, directed by Mitch Campbell, who was like a veteran James Bond film director, starring Daniel Craig and Eva Green, as well as Jeffrey Wright, our buddy from Westworld, Mr. Bernard, or Arnold, whichever.
Yeah, you know, the movie 2006, I haven't really seen Bernard Arnold since I never really saw him ever really before Westworld. And I really thought maybe this was his first movie and it was like that was his only role. And he even got to play like an extra. He was a CIA guy in Langley. You know, he was little more than just a poker player at the table, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, he's actually, what's funny is, and that's why I'm calling this the reboot. You know, that's why I'm saying this is the beginning of New Bond. Because, I mean, not, like, we could kind of even pump the brakes a little bit and back up and say, obviously, we're not strangers to the Bond franchise. What's your first memory of James Bond in general? Like, where was the first What was the first one you saw? How did you, like, become a James Bond fan?
So my dad got me and my bro into it when we were, may rest in peace, when we were really young, you know. So we started off with Dr. No.
You started right at the beginning.
Actually the first Bond movie with Sean Connery. And then we watched Goldfinger, which happened to be the second Bond movie. Then we never really went in any order. We would just get Bond movies here and there. It would be like Roger Moore, Sean Connery, who I think, you know, Connery might be the best, but Roger Moore is right up there. He was a lot of them, you know.
Yeah, I guess Timothy Dalton is just the one that doesn't hold up, or...
Yeah, I don't remember if I even saw License to Kill. I think I may have saw that once, and I think I was in Albany, actually, when I was a kid.
What about Living Daylights? Did you see Living Daylights?
Who's that with?
That was Timothy Dalton's first one.
Oh, I thought he was only in License to Kill.
See, he was in two.
Bond aficionado, but wow. Like, the one thing I found different about this Bond film than others, I find like Le Chiffre being the main bad guy, right? Like Dr. No, Goldfinger. In most old Bond movies, the bad guy they're following the whole movie is the main bad guy. In this one, you sort of find out Le Chiffre is a big part in a huge organization, which, you know, for the most part, that's not really the case. You know, the main bad guy in the movie is the head of the organization, but that's really, I'm not saying that's a criticism. I'm just saying that's something a little different than other Bond movies.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it was always that a Bond movie would be a standalone thing. You could do exactly what you just said, because that's how I got introduced to Bond. The first one I remember seeing as a kid was the Roger Moore one called A View to a Kill. Starring him and Christopher Walken and Grace Jones. And it was, you know, one of those things where, anyone keeping track at home watched Barbarella at 5 or 6, 4 or 5 or 6, whatever the hell it was when I was right before kindergarten. So we already had Dave watching movies that, like, sent a lot of signals about chicks and, like, what dudes do with chicks and all that shit. But everything about it was just so cool, from the way that he did that whole, like, kind of snowboarding thing in the beginning to the cheap ripoff rendition of the Beach Boys, and then that whole, like, the stylized opening sequences that always just featured, like, naked women jumping around, like profiles and silhouettes of naked
chicks. That's the one I think he's in the ski suit, and then he just, like, kills somebody, gets down the hill, takes off the ski suit, tuxedo, right to a party.
And goes into a submarine and starts, like, getting it on with some chick as it's driving away. And it's just like, oh, wow, that's a fucking awesome life, I guess. And what's it called? So, yeah, this immediately has I think to me there's always, when they would make a modern version of either a, you know, a franchise that never really ended, I don't think they ever said this is the end of Bond, you know, after the last Timothy Dalton one, all right, we're not making any more. No, I'm sorry, Pierce Brosnan, but I guess his long-awaited,
that's a big period in between Dalton and Brosnan. We're talking, I think that was the longest period in between Bond movies.
And then even Brosnan, like, the first one was awesome because everybody had been waiting for Pierce Brosnan to play James Bond because of this whole, there was this, like, crazy history where he was doing this show called Remington Steel, and the show had gotten canceled, but they still had him under contract for another year, and at the same time that the show got canceled, they wanted him to play James Bond, and as soon as the show Remington Steel found out he was in talks to play James Bond, they rebooted the show for a year just to kind of screw him out of that opportunity. So when GoldenEye came along, everybody's like, holy shit, Pierce Brosnan is finally playing Bond, and he was awesome.
Yeah, he was in Mrs. Doubtfire before that, don't forget.
Right. He was not in James Bond before that. He was in a lot of other stuff, though, that was cool stuff.
I heard about the character playing James Bond. Do you notice, while Pierce Brosnan was James Bond, he also filmed another incredible movie called The Thomas Crown Affair. And if you notice, he sort of plays like a slick, he's an art thief, right? Is he the thief or is he the guy catching the thief? I think he is the thief.
He's the thief. He's the thief.
But, like, he's also the protagonist of the movie.
Right.
You notice when he wears a tuxedo, he doesn't have a bow tie tied up. That's because whenever you are the acting James Bond, you are not allowed to be in any other movie with a bow tie tied up in your tuxedo.
The bow tie is a Bond signifier. It's like
Well, he was wearing the tuxedo, but in Thomas Crown Affair, like, the tie isn't done up. It's like down like this.
Yeah.
James Bond, you're not allowed to have a tied bow tie and tuxedo in any other movie.
Well, sadly, his stint
I expected a cooler reaction from you from that.
Well, because to me, his stint as Bond, like, immediately deflated. You know what I mean? It was like they got steadily shittier as after GoldenEye, which was kind of sucky.
That's cool.
And,
cool.
And...
What?
Yo, dude, you're like kind of, you're like sounding like you're a million miles away all of a sudden.
Sorry, I think Tina Turner did the song, the opening song for GoldenEye.
Oh, yeah, she did. GoldenEye was hers. And that was, I mean, like, they had the Madonna song for one of them after that. And I think Bono did one of the songs for one of the ones after that. After GoldenEye, though, that's where I kind of lost my interest in James Bond. So even when I heard that this was coming out, when they were like, oh, they're rebooting James Bond and Daniel Craig's going to play him, I kind of didn't care. And so, like, I didn't see this in the movies. And when I saw it on cable, I was like, holy shit, how did I not see this in the movies?
This was actually, like, as far as Casino Royale, so there was the Peter Sellers version in the 60s, but also there was a CBS TV movie. I don't know if they did it in two-hour parts. They did a Casino Royale also, like with Le Chiffre, everything.
And was it serious or?
I think there's another comedy one, like a spoof of it, but I think the CBS TV movie was serious but not well done.
Because that also I thought was kind of interesting that that was the one they chose to make for the beginning of the Daniel Craig era, the new Bond era, the post 2000 era.
I think what it was in one of his more incredible books, which I can't even say I read any of them.
Oh, I've not read a single one, and I won't ever.
It's one of his more incredible ones, and they just never made a good movie for it, right? So, because you have to remember, James Bond is anybody's territory because they are books, right? You just have to buy the rights from the Fleming estate or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, unless I'm pretty sure. If it was not the studio, maybe the production company. And I know, like, when the Broccoli's are producing it, that it's, like, the official canon James Bond, or at least all the good ones, because there are a few rogue ones that were produced outside of that. But it's still, I think, like, I would imagine they would buy a bunch of, like, a bunch of them. But if Casino Royale is one that they only could see is doing as a parody, I'm pretty sure this one has proved that, like, super wrong, and maybe it needed to wait until the post-2000s when people were thinking about making things on a more complex scale, because it very clearly, the way this one ends, it's setting up a continuity, which we've not seen in the James Bond movies before, where, like, whatever happens in the next movie is going to be directly connected to this one with crossing over characters and everything.
And I think this is the first Bond movie where they clearly show that Bond is a codename, 007's a codename.
Yeah.
Oh, it used to just be, I would think, like, I never really cared Connery Moore, they're the same person. But this one, it's like, because you have to remember the first scene,
he
kills the MI6 agent, and his handler, that's actually what got him to 00 status.
Right, well, that was like the guy said they wouldn't have sent you, they'd send a 00, and he goes, how do you know I'm not a 00?
Well, that kill actually made him a 00, which I've read, they don't really explain that in the movie, but I actually read it somewhere else.
You need to make at least two kills, right?
Right, so he killed the MI6 agent, and he killed the guy in the bathroom, the guy he was feeding the information to.
Yeah.
So if you're a 00 and you're a 007, your code name is James Bond. That's what I'm pretty sure. At least that's what they made its theme in this movie, I guess, to make it more, continuous. It's like, oh, you know, we're back 5 years later with the same character and a different actor, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and I kind of actually like that. And they have a lot of scenes where M is even saying, like, oh, I knew it was too early to make you a 00. Like, he's saying something like, you know, I hear the life expectancy for a 00 isn't very long, so you won't have to regret the mistake. You know, it's like things like that where they talk about it so blatantly, and it's sort of like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, why did we never think about it like that before? You know, like,
M was just a random initial. I didn't know it was short for your name. If you mention another syllable, I will have you killed.
Yeah, she was awesome. She was
M from the Pierce Brosnan movies, if I remember correctly.
Was she? Yeah, she was. She was.
What's her name?
Judi Dench. Dame, yeah. Judi Dench, which I guess means it's like the female version of being knighted, right? She's like Lady Judi Dench or Dame Judi Dench. Yeah, she's badass. Like, you don't want to fuck with her. Like, even when she comes out, so after the parkour sequence, which, I mean, I always look at this movie because I've seen it, I think they were playing it through the holidays on one of the cable stations. like every day I watched it. You know, all through December, I watched it every single day. And it's kind of like it's broken into five major sequences, right? It's sort of like the open and the parkour. Then there's the airport situation. There's like that first resort in the airport. Then where does he go from there? The card game or the train and meeting what's her name in the card game?
Or what's her name?
Vesper, whatever her last name is.
Well, it goes from the opening scene, then it goes to you meet Le Chiffre, he's playing on the boat or something, and then you go...
Oh, no, we also saw Le Chiffre in Africa or somewhere taking a bunch of
money.
Yeah.
Then you see Bond in Madagascar in a crazy opening chase scene against this really agile dude.
Yeah, so, I mean, Le Chiffre is a great character to start one of these universes off with because he's like this international terrorist money launderer, like money investor. He's the Bernie Madoff. He's a Bernie Madoff. He's like taking people's money and using it to finance other shit and promising the first people like a crazy return. So it's just a big shell game. And so he spends the whole movie sweating his balls off because he is in debt, like up to his eye.
Well, I don't understand. I'm not a money guy. You know, so obviously Bond stopping the plane blowing up. What did he put his money on, though? Like,
he was, I forget how they describe it, but he was selling off all of his stock in that airline, and the broker was telling him that doesn't make sense to do because they're just about to announce this new model of airplane that's going to revolutionize international travel, and the stock is expected to go up in like by a crazy amount. And he says, just do it anyway. And the plan was that they were going to blow up the prototype at the showing. Right. And that would...
Selling the stock short make him lose $100 million.
It didn't, because it would have... He would have made money if the stock went down in price because of when he was selling. He was selling when it was still high, and that accident would cause the stock to drop the next day.
Like, right, but why would that make him lose his money, though?
It wouldn't. He would have made money if that happened.
But why did he lose his money?
Because the stock went up. Like, the stock was projected to, like, double or triple as soon as that...
He still cashed out.
He cashed out, like, there was the way... The way it worked, it was that, yeah, I know, right? Whereas Gomez is probably listening to us now going, what the fuck, guys? How do you not understand?
Jew, he should know his money.
Oh, shit. See, like, yeah, that's these days.
Gomez is not an anti-Semite.
These days, you gotta be careful, man. Who knows what's going on out there? There are people fucking spray painting shit, and there are rallies happening. We gotta, like, calm it down. Anyway. Yeah, it was definitely, there is a way that this works in the market. Like, I know it's a big deal. They did the same kind of thing supposedly happened at 9/11. I mean, that's, they even mention it in this movie.
9/11, the chief made the money, right?
Yeah, but that was also like, because the airlines that crashed, their stock plummeted the next day. So anybody who sold off their stocks the night before, like, made a shit ton of money right before they became worthless. So anybody who bought the stocks lost a shit ton of money.
Whatever happened, Le Chiffre lost a lot of dangerous people's money.
Yeah. Well, it was the guy we saw him take all that money from in the beginning. You know what I mean?
He could have invested way more than that guy's money too, right?
Yeah.
He was like a financier of terrorists.
Well, we definitely find out whoever Mr. White is working for was like, you know what, when it finally comes to catch up with him at the end, they're just like, yeah, you know, dude, you fucked up too many times, and we just don't trust you anymore. Like, this is how we end our arrangements with people, with a bullet in the fucking head. Like, we come in while you're in the middle of torturing somebody else, just to be like, yup, we're badder ass than you are.
That torture well. It's like, you scratched, everyone will know you scratched my balls.
That was
you.
crazy weird.
Itches on the left.
Jumping all over the place, but this friggin' movie, and that's the thing though, like when you say to people like, oh yeah, Casino Royale, like certain sequences pop out to their, you know what I mean? Like,
it was so Bond though, when I remember the over elegant European hotels, the meals.
Well, you know what there wasn't any of, really, in my opinion? The gimmicks with, like, all the super, like, the secret agent gadgets, you know? Like, there wasn't, like...
It's in his glove compartment a little bit.
But it was very normal. It was just a gun.
And he usually has, what's his name, showing him how to use the stuff before. I forgot
Q.
What
it used to be Q.
You know, he didn't have any of that. And very weird, he was driving a Ford at the beginning of the movie. I know it's product placement, but James Bond doesn't drive no Ford.
Well, they change it quick enough.
Yeah, I know. Right? But, you know, Sony got their product placement in this movie. Ford got it in there, you know?
Yeah, well,
they made sure not to do anything cool with the Ford because it's, you know, not a Beaver. You know what I mean?
You know who else got product placement was for that whole fucking bodies exhibit. Did that ever come up to Canada? This like, actual traveling road show made of real life human cadavers. Like,
I've heard of it, but I think no, I don't know.
And I mean that added a whole level of creep factor to one sequence of the movie where it's like,
Mr.
So like first we see him get the kills to become 007. Why is he in Madagascar? They're looking for him because he's a known terrorist. So, he's a bomb maker. Okay.
So remember the scene after where they got the guy to dress up in the Miami Police Department, right? So whenever they text that guy, that was the code to the
Ellipsis, yeah.
So what I'm thinking was the person in Madagascar was the original person who was supposed to do that. So he got the Ellipsis.
Oh, shit.
It's a little weird. He was in Madagascar, so he was going to fly to Miami, I guess, and...
But that still doesn't... Like what, did they have... When... Sorry. He comes back. Is that when then M finds him in her apartment and then he's in Madagascar?
So he fucks up in Madagascar because it was on the news.
Right. So
he's M's apartment.
So we don't really know what he's doing there, but it's just one of those beginning of the movie things where he's fucking there and this is
he's dropping the original Ellipsis guy. That guy couldn't do it anymore, so they have to change guys. And they even showed it. They even showed something about so that gentleman that he killed at the body exhibit was who chooses the person who it is, right?
Ah, right, yeah, Alex Dimitrios.
He's so pissed at him because, like, you chose a guy who's being followed by MI6.
Wow, dude, I've seen this so many times, and I was always like, well, whatever, it's just like that tropey thing where the guy happens to be after this one dude, and that guy winds up being connected to this whole other big thing, but I never... Fuck, all right, well, I'm stupid.
That's why Bond should never work with other people, because that guy just fucked it up. Like, well,
And it's funny because like he just got promoted to the 00 and that other guy you have to assume has been there maybe for a minute before James. I don't know if they
from the 00. He's just like he's a spy.
Yeah, he's just one of his dudes and he's just like, all right, dude, and put your gun away. Like, what are you fucking doing? You know, it's just one of those like, all right, I'll just have to do this myself and run through something that a superhero would need to like survive. I mean, how do you have the balls to run up the crane? The first.
I'm just going to stop it. I'm like now afraid of heights.
Yeah. You're like I'm just like watching it going like shit, dude. And the fact that there are people who do this, like there are these. You ever go on YouTube and watch any of these? Like,
for that reason. I'm scared of heights. I'm scared of other people's heights.
There was one of this girl playing on the edge of a balcony of this like really high rise building, and she's just completely like. Nonchalant, totally natural, perfectly balanced, and everyone watching it's going, oh my fucking god, like, what are you doing? Yeah, you didn't see that movie Man on Wire or whatever it was? And so, yeah, they have this crazy chase scene where actually there's a video game I was playing.
He was agile on that guy.
And he was, yeah, it almost seemed like he kind of was just better than James Bond, which, you know, you're not really supposed to kind of feel like anybody in the movie is better than James Bond. This guy...
He takes the beatings, too. He's jack of all trades. That guy was just a master of being, like, a trapeze artist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's a parkour. He's an expert parkour guy. You know, that's what they call that, right? That's, like, what
the... Bond, like, dabbles in parkour. I'm not going to say jack of all, master in none. He's almost a master in all, but...
It reminds me of, like, when you're playing the video game and you're like, oh, shit, I didn't take that skill. And that's why, like, there's one of those times where the guy runs and he jumps on a bar and then swings his feet and he goes through this, like, high...
Yeah, he just runs through the wall.
And, yeah, James just, like, bursts through, like, the fucking Hulk, like... And I'm like, yeah, I guess that's what I would do if I was in this... I'd be, like, fuck you and your little hole jump, dude. Fuck this. It's like a sheet of sheetrock.
Oh, yeah, it was like they were in the middle of construction, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man, all those guys. Talk about, like, the worst day at work ever. You're like, oh, these fucking dudes just came running on the site. One guy fell and a friggin' blowtorch pack exploded. Three guys are dead. You know, we basically are 6 months behind now. We have to do...
I can't imagine in, like, in countries like that, they treat the construction workers well, so I'm sure they got their asses kicked by, like, their foreman after.
Oh, or just the fact that they're not getting paid now for the next, like, 3 months when they have to, like shut down and, like, repair and, like,
yeah,
clean
and
up.
And those workers that died, their family ain't getting shit. I'm not funny, but, yeah.
And then, oh, my God.
Deep into it.
But it is also, you know, like I always say, John Wick feels like video game the movie. This is like one of the first like well shot action movies that kind of felt like video game the movie, because I feel like I remember playing GoldenEye on N64 and this is kind of what it would be like. Oh shit, you set off the alarm, now the whole embassy is after you, you know what I mean? And so it's like,
I remember the mission, I just remember 8 people getting high, license to kill, the facility, you're not allowed to pick odd jobs.
Facility! No odd job! Oh my god! License to
kill, so if the game goes fast. The facility is like the smallest level, so like you can't really hide that much, you know.
And license to kill was one hit kills, right? Like one bullet hits you and you die. It was the same, instead of having golden guns that you could
exactly.
use.
You could, you know, when you're a lot of people, you have to pass the controllers quickly, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, yeah, you use the RCP-90 and you just like light up the room, like or you put a laptop gun, let it be like a sentry.
Well, even license to kill, let's say I get a punch on you, you're dead too.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, next thing you know, the sun is up, it's 5 a.m.
And everybody's got a final in 10 minutes, yeah.
And then it's like, now let's play WCW versus NWO The Revenge.
Whereas I would love a video game of this, you know what I mean? I think a video game of Casino Royale, which I'm sure they probably have, and I'm just...
And by the way, the missions in 007 were incredible, it was just, it was all about the multiplayer.
But there were, like, those aspects of the mission where it's like, oh, you set off the alarm, now everybody's
coming
together.
Yeah, you have to, like, hide, you couldn't be seen, it was a legit game.
Yeah. Hold on 1 second real quick.
No problem.
And he just, like, you know, what you would do in the video game is you'd wind up, like, just shooting everybody one at a time. He's just like, fuck this, we're gonna go and do a Mexican standoff. But he still winds up kind of getting them all with one shot. It was a very badass move. And from that moment on, I'm just like, well, this movie's gonna be awesome. You know what I mean? I remember watching it the first time going, like, holy shit, I really should have gone to see this.
Yeah, I can't wait. My son's 6, and he, you know, he's now just, like, he's a Star Wars aficionado, man. I'm, like, so proud. Like, he's just literally Star Wars 24/7. Like, I'll be in the car with him, and out of nowhere, he'll be like, Dad, you know when Empire Strikes Back, Luke has a green lightsaber, but then, like, he's like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I cannot wait. And he hates kissing, so maybe it's a little too early for Bond.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's funny, whenever there's a kissing scene in Star Wars, he looks at me to make sure I'm not making fun of him. I go, right? But
that's funny.
And he loves like killing and like blood and stuff. He's like begging me to watch Friday the 13th.
Hey, you're proudly telling the world, yeah, he loves killing. My kid's awesome.
Well, like my wife told me, like he's like, you know, Owen was a little scared of one of the movies. He was just too a little embarrassed to tell you. I'm like, embarrassed, you know, but. I showed him a picture of Jason on, like, Google Images. He's like, we have to watch Friday the 13th. Your mother ain't as cool as me, dude.
But I don't know, man. Do you think if he's into stuff like that, would he be into James Bond? Is James Bond too tame? Because, I mean, like...
It's killing. I mean, and you know what? Rogue One, I know you didn't see it yet, but as far as, like, Star Wars movies goes, it's more of a thinker movie, a strategy movie, than just, like, an all-out... There's your explosions, but, you know, they're... Darth Vader's in it, you know, you see one lightsaber, and he liked it for what it was. It wasn't his favorite one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he understands the timeline. The only thing is, he loves the first 3 episodes, because they're kids' movies.
Oh, no, he likes the new trilogy.
But his favorite one is Empire Strikes Back.
I thank God.
He loves the second one, because he loves Anakin, and Episode 2 is the only movie where he's just Anakin without any trace of Darth Vader.
Oh, but, like,
He likes the bad guys also. My son's like, he's growing up like his dad. He's a cool
fucking kid. And he's thinking about it. It's not just colors and sounds washing over him.
Like, his life is Star Wars now. And that even, this even makes sense in this podcast, because there's 2 prominent Star Wars actors in this. Craig is in The Force Awakens.
Yeah, like, if you didn't see him, don't feel bad. He was covered head to toe in Stormtrooper outfit, so.
Uncredited, and Le Chiffre is a huge part in Rogue One. I don't even want to say what he is, because...
Yeah, it'll ruin it for me. I'm actually amazed that I've stayed...
He's the builder of the Death Star.
Oh, motherfucker. I'm literally about to say, I'm like, I'm amazed at how spoiler-free I've been able to stay on Rogue One.
You know the movie's about the building of the Death Star.
Right, it's literally that, like, this ends, and 5 minutes later, A New Hope begins. Right, yeah.
So Shifra is the man responsible for building the Death Star, and I will shut my mouth, because I want to talk, and I'll shut my mouth.
Gotcha, and he turns out to really be Luke's father because Darth Vader was actually impotent. If there's stuff that, like, and that's why I say I would love a video game of this, because they could actually, like, expand on a lot more. Like, your first mission would probably be to have to kill that guy in the bathroom in the beginning, because this felt the way the video games feel these days, where it's like, all right, you go on this mission, you get this information, now it's going to lead you here, and you have to get these new skills and get these new weapons, and you go here. And if you go here, go outside, the car is waiting for you, you open the car door, and, like, in the glove compartment is a gun, and this thing that'll bring you back to life if you're, like, poisoned or injured too much. You know what I mean? It was like, and of course, because we showed it to you later in the movie, it's gonna get used. And it was, I thought every sequence in this movie had that moment of like, wow, this was the sequence for me. This really is the memorable sequence for this movie. And then the next one happens, you're like, oh shit, that one's cool too. And they just keep stacking up.
There wasn't a scene where I looked away. You know, the poker scenes were great.
Yeah, I mean, even the drive, it's almost too, like, there's each sequence gets like a signature thing, like the airport has him fighting that guy in the truck, you know, like trying to stop the text. The
on his jeans there. Oh, that was amazing.
With the little carabiner, like, and then the guy thinks he's about to blow the thing up, and all of a sudden he hears it on him, and of course when he sees it, it's too late. And you know the moment that happened. Like, they're fighting. There's all this amazing truck fighting, like, through windshields and through. It's very, like, Indiana Jones really should not make any more movies after this, because, like, Daniel Craig owns fighting on vehicles now.
Yeah, but you know what? He had a lot of dirty kills. Like, even that, like, first scene where he's killing the handler, like, that's a dirty kill. He had to drown him in the...
It's a dirty kill.
He's a clean killer, man. He had a lot of dirty kills in this movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but then the MI6 guy was just one shot that blew him out of his chair, but it was one shot to the head.
That's for the style, you know? But you'd think it's harder to kill the MI6 guy than the handler.
Yeah. I don't know. And
the MI6 guy he killed was 00 status.
No, well, yeah, no, I don't think. Is MI6 is the same division, right? It's the same agency?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the 00s are kind of like their own rogue, you know, like they're almost like a splinter unit, you know, and probably the proper MI6 guys, like, look down on them or some shit. You know, there's probably some animosity between their two divisions.
Oh, sure, and even like Bond told that guy, like, M has no problem with you making your own money, just not for selling our secrets.
Yeah, and it's like, and by the way, this isn't me saying this is a warning, like, if I'm here, you're fucked. It's already over, you're fired. Like, this is, you know, the same way Lashif fires people by killing them. Because, like, then we see Lashif who's playing cards on that boat, and he was like, give our friends 5 minutes to leave, and if not, just throw them overboard. You're like,
yeah, what the fuck's up with that, man?
Like, dude.
And they weren't even bad guys. They were just playing cards, you know?
Yeah, and he's, I guess, like, his gimmick is that he's so good at math and probabilities that that's why he's awesome at cards. And so, like, he's telling me, he's like, oh, you have a 12% chance of beating my hand or whatever. And they're like, oh, okay, we will fold.
Did you, okay, so I wasn't that surprised when, I forgot that dude's name. The guy that told the Shifra, like, Bond knows your tell, like.
Mathis, who was played by Giancarlo Giannini, who you might remember from Hannibal.
He was a double agent. Were you surprised that Vesper was a double agent at all? Like,
I remember the first time watching this being like, well, holy fucking shit, is anybody doing what they're saying they're doing? And is like, this why James Bond, I mean, if we're looking at this as a reboot, but a reboot that's going to continue themes that were already established by the series, is this why James Bond is so like, I have temporary relationships, you know what I mean? Like, the chick I'm fucking in this movie, I'm only fucking in this movie. Yeah. Between movies, you either assume she got killed, got pregnant, and I sent her away with a bunch of money to never come back, or whatever, but she's not going to be the chick I'm with in the next movie. And
in a lot of the movies, the chick is the double agent, right? I think in Octopussy, it's like that.
Well, Pussy Galore, yeah.
On the computer, so when I saw there was 20 minutes left, because you know when you're watching something on a computer,
mm-hmm.
like, something else has to be up, right?
Yeah, that's actually, so that's a little bit of an un, Well, I guess you always had a running counter. You could have had that on your VCR back in the day, or you could have just been sort of like keeping mental note. It's almost like when we would be watching Lost back in the day, and you're like, man, this is awesome. How much is left? And you look at your watch, and you're like, oh, fuck, only 2 minutes? This is over now. But, yeah, like you kind of...
Actually, we'll find out what happens, and then fuck you.
Yeah, basically.
It'll be like a Carlo episode there. What do they call that couple there?
The Nikki Paolo.
Yeah, the spiders. Fuck you, Nikki Paolo. Yeah.
Don't ever mention their names again. But yeah, when that, because all of a sudden, and that's the thing, it was sort of like all the sections were like, okay, here's the intro section, here's the first action sequence with the truck and the airport, and now here's the spying stuff where he's undercover at the card game. And the card game, which I wrote down, is like a basically like a circus show of fucking rich people. Like
in covered though, like the chief knew who he was, like Mr. Bond. But.
Well, I don't think that they were supposed to necessarily know that Bond was an MI6 agent. Although I guess because Demetrios already told him.
You know, it's not an organization, you know.
And he, I mean, but he, well, and he, we eventually find out that he knew she was from the Treasury, but like.
And if you have to have $100 million, $150 million, to pay your terrorist creditors back. How do you not fucking cheat with that tournament?
Well, I mean, dude, he poisoned James Bond. You know what
true,
I mean?
True.
It's like it's James Bond.
Right.
Yeah, there was a little bit more than cheating. It was full on, flat out murder. The competition. It was like, hey, fuck you, dude, with money, you're out. I mean, the thing is, too, like here are the names of the other people that were at the table. You don't ever hear them all spoken, so that's why I thought it was funny that they even have these names. But Infante, who is played by ADA, capital ADA, is what's written in the credits. I don't know who that is. I was gonna say, I'm willing to bet it's Tyrone, you silly fart bastard, who is
Tyrone from Snatch.
From Snatch, yeah.
Him?
That's Tyrone.
The first getaway driver of all time.
And it is him, yeah. Fuck yeah, that's right. So his name though was Infante, which to me just feels like a foreign version of the word infant, which is supposed to be like what he looks like, a big baby.
I love how they have in that scene like a rich representative from every continent. You had your African rich guy, your Asian rich guy, your American rich guy.
Tomelli, who was the first guy who got to put in the big blind, and then they don't ever say her name, but the Asian lady. Her name's Madame Wu. That's what it says in the credits. Fucking Madame
Wu. She could have been a Bond villain in another movie.
Yeah, but it's also when they were
doing... Noble's granddaughter and come to avenge you.
And when they were doing the close-ups of all those people at the beginning of the event, you know, before they even sat down at the table, I'm going like, and it doesn't matter who you are, and it doesn't matter who you are, and it's... And all I'm going to know is like, and you're the guy with the crazy long gray hair. That was Mr. Fukutu, played by Tom So. The other people at the table besides Madame Wu were Gallardo. We don't know which one that guy was. Kamenovsky. Don't know which that one is. I'm going to have to look up the people's names on IMDb to find out which one was the other female at the table, because none of these names are automatically inherently female.
What was Bernard's name?
That was now okay. So now this is getting back to a point I was starting to make before when we got off on we went off on the rails a little bit. He was playing a guy named Felix Leiter, and that's why this is like Bond reboot, because every Bond movie we've seen before this, he has run into or at some point made contact with a friend of his in the CIA named Felix Leiter. In fact, Living Daylights, it's his wedding that they're at the very beginning of Living Daylights. Not Living Daylights, License to Kill. He's the one.
The old movies, he's the comic relief guy.
Yeah, to a degree.
Big time.
In View to a Kill, he was just sort of like a guy who had information.
He's an old white guy, like an older white gentleman.
Yeah, yeah.
Comic relief, I remember that guy. I didn't know. So that's the same guy, Felix Leiter?
Well, Felix Leiter is, I think, Felix Leiter is the CIA's version of a James Bond. You know what I mean? I think that might be a
right. Oh, that's
an
awesome
identity that gets cycled around because he wasn't black before. You know what I mean? So it wasn't Jeffrey Wright. It wasn't Jeffrey Wright before. It was like, you know.
Jeffrey Wright's the best actor.
Dude, it was fucking awesome. I'm not saying it bad. I'm not saying it in a bad way. I'm just saying that it's like.
You're saying like Bond, it's the new.
And that's why, like, when he says, I'm Felix Leiter, friend from Langley, I'm like, holy shit, Felix Leiter's in this? And.
Are they just gonna fucking bite the bullets, make Idris Elba the next Bond? I don't care what fucking color he is.
He's gonna be the gunslinger in the gunslinger movie, which the Stephen King novels were written with that character fashioned around and modeled after and expected to have someone like him playing it, Clint Eastwood. So we are kind of breaking those barriers a bit with that movie. And I think once that works, because that's one of those things that even I was like, wait a minute, what? I grew up for like the last 20 years picturing somebody like this guy playing that character. And like Matthew McConaughey,
you know,
playing.
If you change like that, the world will never change, right? Because obviously anything in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the antagonist is played, the protagonist is played by a Caucasian, right?
For the most part, yeah.
Changing it somewhere, right? So,
it'll become like almost everything else, where even like with this, with Bond, it's like, you know, there's the books, there's the early movies, there's the new movies. You enjoy whichever fucking one you like the best. You know what I mean? Like, don't feel like they all have to literally be the same thing, because what's the point in having all these multiple versions?
Like, literally a shade of skin. I know the same for you means nothing, no difference to me. Same for you, obviously.
Right.
I would love, you know, not only just to make a statement, but I think a statement should be made. I think Idris Elba would be
good James Bond. Well, I think he was in the running to play Bond after they finished this whole, after Spectre came out, when they were trying to figure out what they were going to do with the franchise.
Oh, there was a thing with that? Good. So I'm not
he was in the running. I know that was like, it became a thing where they were talking about, once it became known he was doing Gunslinger, then it was like he's automatically out of the running for that, because Gunslinger is going to be a multi-film, like Lord of the Rings level, epic scoped project. So,
which I hate, because you're so in love with the book and there's no way it will reach your expectations.
It also is the kind of thing that maybe they should just not make certain novel series into movies. Like, unless you're going to Peter Jackson that shit up, like you're going to do a Lord of the Rings. Or unless you're going to do this and make, like, a James Bond, where it's like, holy dude, this is the Bond of the 2000s, you know?
Is he badass Gunslinger from the Dark Tower series?
Yeah, it's magical, you know what I mean? It's like...
Preston of England was explaining it to me, and apparently it's based off of... That character is based off like a boyfriend of Stephen King's mother, who he really liked, actually. Because Stephen King was very afraid of like ghosts as a kid.
Uh-huh.
And this guy would just comes in, he's like, yep, ghosts are real, but I fucking killed them for you, so go to sleep. So I've never read it, but my wife's cousin in England's like he's a Stephen King aficionado like you and Mr. Bauer.
I'd say that's sort of half right, but there's a lot more to it. Like, he's also based on The Man with No Name, who is basically most of Clint Eastwood's characters in the Spaghetti Westerns, and you combine those two things with the Arthurian Knights of the Round Table, and that's what you get the Gunslingers, you know?
I know King Arthur, so that's interesting.
So the Gunslingers are like Arthurian Knights, whereas James Bond is more like just a rogue assassin. You know what I mean? So
I dabble in Arthurian literature, and I hate the new movies because they always try to make him like this super action star. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Back to Star Wars. Star Wars is based on King Arthur.
Oh, nice. Huh. I mean, Mads Mikkelsen in this obviously left a big impression. They totally lampooned this on South Park. I think as soon as they do that, you know, you're like, you really kind of hit the nail on the head there. This might be the first thing I ever saw him in. And that torture sequence, I mean, like, so the whole idea of he's going to try to win back the money he owes to all these terrorists by having this high-stakes game where, I guess, because of his amazing math skills and probability and shit, he was going to be able to outplay all these other people except for Bond, who is just as good, if not better. And when that didn't work out, the first time he actually does wipe Bond out. Like, he does take all of Bond's money because Mathis turns out to not really be Bond's friend. That's supposed to be his contact when he gets to Montenegro. And he's like a chief of police, or is he like a...
Yeah, no, so Mathis is the contact, but like to show his trust to Bond. So the chief of police was in the chief's Hassan, and he's like, I planted evidence, he's placing bribe. So he shows Bond that he got the chief of police arrested to gain Bond's trust.
Right. But what is he an agent for some other secret agency? I forget. Like,
yeah, let's just go. He was his contact.
He has some status though. He has some status as an agent in something.
Yeah, definitely not British. You can tell by the accent. No, they're in Sarajevo, so it's like the old like Serbia, Montenegro. It's in Montenegro, so it's like Serbia, You know, I don't know really. I have a few Croatian friends.
It was filmed on location in the Czech Republic. So is that where, is it more, or is that just like...
This is the old Yugoslavia.
Okay, so this, but they just, so they went for like the look and they found...
Yugoslavia was broken up into like Croatia, Serbia, Montenegro.
Okay.
So, Yugoslavia should never have been one country, but that's another...
Yeah, we're covering all kinds of bases.
I think that's for Dan Carlin to discuss, not us.
Yeah, we didn't even start mentioning any of the slight Illuminati shit that was going on in this movie. Well,
I just don't know about that kind of thing.
No, I think it's more just sort of like the shadow government. The idea of the group that the Mr. White is working for is this level of like, you know, secrecy and power. Definitely the end where that guy has the one darkened sunglass and the one open sunglass, like. That there is something when you see like one eye covered, it's supposed to be like the eye of Horus, the all seeing eye, and then
like on top of the temple in the
on a dollar bill, yeah, and it's like it depends, and which eye is which color is significant. I don't know. I
thought that guy was the Schifra for a second, like he was covering the bad eye, the blood eye. It looked like
yeah. Well, he's actually, to me, he's more important than Le Chiffre, but he's been working with Le Chiffre for a while.
Oh, that was the first, like, we didn't see him until the end of the movie, that guy, though.
No, he was the guy, he was there the whole time. He was like, he was kind of the, he's the guy who cuts the bottom out of the chair when they put Daniel Craig in the chair.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm sure when we find out that he's still alive at the end, he's probably the one who let in Mr. White to kill Le Chiffre and the blonde chick and everybody else while they were torturing them. You know what I mean? Because like,
cut the chair was like henchman number one or something.
Yeah, well, no, there was a bald guy walking around with him that kind of looked like he was henchman number one most of the time. He's the guy that's then wearing the one sunglass, the one darkened sunglass.
Same guy.
Yeah, and when they're on the boat into Venice at the end, she sees him on the walkway, like walking along the water, and she doesn't say anything to James. That's like the first hint that like, oh shit, she's still a bad guy. You know what I mean? Because almost like maybe that was partly too why she didn't give him the money to buy his way back in when he got wiped out. You know. When she was like, I can't give you the money because, you know, you lost because your ego got out of control and you're just going to lose more. And meanwhile, the CIA guy's like, here you go. First of all, hi. Second of all, fuck that shit. You're going to win and I'm not. Here's the money. And the only thing is if you win, we take the guy in. Although then my question becomes, well, where the fuck were you when he was out here kidnapping the chick and like leaving her in the middle of the road for me to almost run over? And that's how I got caught and had to have my nuts almost crushed by a fucking...
And he got a text from M saying the CIA has the Chiffre.
Right. Well,
that was a fake text from the double-crossing guy.
Yeah.
My God, what's his name?
Mathis.
Mathis.
Yeah, she said Mathis needs me, but she also said the CIA has made contact with Le Chiffre. I'm like, all right, well then that means everything's all good. They should be able to eat this steak dinner and then go back to their rooms and get it on.
But how she said Mathis needs me, he knew, like, I better chase it.
Because it's in his head, it's like, oh shit, Mathis. You know, it's like he was on the high from winning that he totally forgot. Like, oh yeah, that guy fucked me over before, and now he needs you right after they lost? What?
He didn't know Mathis fucked him over at that point.
And that's what he tells her later in the hospital. Like, he realized that he told Le Chiffre that he knows Le Chiffre's tell.
But after Le Chiffre told him, Mathis is really my friend.
Right. But
by the time she said, I'm going to see Mathis, he had no idea Mathis was a double agent.
Until she got up and left. He realized it right as she left. That's why he's chasing her.
Yeah, but I don't know why he realized that. There was nothing there to make her realize Mathis was
because bad. He was trying to, like, he's sitting there, he just won, and I guarantee you he's thinking, yeah, that motherfucker, how did he take me out that way? Holy fuck, I told her and Mathis that I knew what his tell was. You know what I mean? He hid the 2 + 2 = 4 for him all of a sudden. Because he wanted to fuck her. You know what I mean? Like, he was really like, he's like, oh man, I thought I was going to get her finally. You know what I mean? Like, I showed her that I could still do this. And then like, oh, wait a minute. Like, all these things are going on in his head. And he goes after her. And then smartly, they know, let's just drop her in the middle of the fucking road. He'll probably run her over. That takes care of one of them for us. Although, they actually, shit, that should be a clue, too, that she was working with them. Because they needed the account number, right? Like, didn't she had part of the information and he had part of the information. He had the password, she had the account number, and he was saying to him, like, she has probably already given us the information we need, so why don't you just give me your information and we'll leave her alive? You know what I mean? Like, it was already like, you're so fucked. And that's the only part, to be honest, as awesome as this movie is, the one part that I really don't like is that he pretty much would have died there. You know what I mean? Like, there's always in these movies a moment where, like, the hero actually is in an unwinnable, like a Kobayashi Maru. You're fucked. There's no way you're getting out of this. And the only way they survive is by either someone else intervening or somebody else dying in place of them.
Well, she made a deal. She said, I'll give you the money if you spare his life.
Right. Well, he didn't know that.
Right. Like, he was fucked.
Yeah, and, like, as far as he's concerned, like, if this were a mission that were being graded by his bosses at home, if this were a training, they'd be like, okay, so do you realize where you made your mistake? Because up until here, you were fine. You actually completed your mission right here.
You're like, fuck you.
But it's like, the fact is, like, when you're sitting there in that chair and the guy is swinging this fucking... I don't even know how to describe what that rope was. It was just a rope with like
It was like a metal hook.
It was almost like a fucking black a blackjack at the end of it, because it just
His balls were like dangling. Oh, that's bad news, man.
Like, can you imagine how much pain that was? Like, at one point when he's just like jumping in the chairs, moving around, he's just like, no, and I'm like,
see, I am the what the chair was made out of. Just putting your ass through that, like, forget, like, getting my balls. Like, he has his ass scraped by, like,
you would already be like, I'll tell you what you want to know. I'll tell you what you want to know. Oh, my God, my ass is on fire. Holy shit. Splinters. God, Splinters.
Cool secret hideout is 1, 2, 3.
Oh, my God. It's her fucking name. It's her name. Get it up.
I wouldn't be good in any kind of, like, resistance or anything, you know?
Yeah, good to know. Good to know. If Morin looks like he's getting captured and you're not going to be able to save his ass, shoot that motherfucker in the head. He's going to tell them everything. I want the snipers ready to put us down. Starship Troopers his ass. Oh, shit. Well, that, I mean, to be honest, James does have a pretty quick turn of change of feeling when he finds out that she fucked him over. Like, so, you know, we had initial find the information, spying shit. There was a little bit of flirting during the spying shit. Like, after he winds up killing the guy that he owes, that Lashif owes part of the money to, because those guys, when Lashif's little plane scam goes awry, that warlord we saw in the beginning shows up and is like, where the fuck's my money? Like, he was gonna, like, he threatened to
shit he's his girlfriend's eye. He doesn't do it, but
he was going to, and then he was like, oh, he didn't even try to stop me. He's like, you should get a new boyfriend, you know what I mean? Like, kind of that foreshadowing moment too, like, yeah, being with a guy like this is gonna get you killed, you know what I mean? And it does.
The incredible fight scene on the stairs.
Yeah, holy shit. And that one guy, first move, James just throws him down. I'm like, dude, you know how pissed I would be if I was... There's so many things, so many ways that people die in this movie that I'm like, you know how angry I'd be if that's how I got killed? If this is how it all ended, like, I'm like, where are you going? Oh, fuck, come on, no! I'm falling down the stairs, that's bullshit! I'm a fucking ninja! You know what I mean? Oh, shit. But yeah, so they killed that guy. But Lashif obviously still owed a lot of money to other people.
Well, I think after that, it was more his organization just like, Lashif is useless. We can't trust him anymore. You know what I mean?
Well, they also see, like, look, it's a shell game. He's Ponzi scheming us. He's Bernie Madoff. Like, he used our money for this other thing and he lost it. And now we need it and he doesn't fucking have it. And he guaranteed us we would make more money, not lose shit. So we got to end our relationship. And then when that section of the spying stuff ends, we have James in recovery, and then it just keeps going. It's almost like now we're in the new movie that's James and this chick on vacation. You know what I mean? Like, in Venice. And they still have the money.
And that's where I noticed there was 20 minutes left. I'm like, okay, that's a long time.
And they have not given the money back to the... And they actually... Don't they only owe, like... 50 million or 10 million to,
Yeah, you gotta give all the money back.
I mean, to me, it should be like...
As far as we know, she transferred the money by then. We didn't know anything.
Right, yeah, that's right. So she must have transferred it to, like, a dummy account.
Where where the fuck's our money?
Yeah. She's like, so, listen, I got your resignation letter, and I gotta be honest, the fact that the money's not back and we just got that, it really doesn't look good. But we'll talk about that once I let you know we don't have the fucking money. You know, and he's like, oh, right, let me figure that out, and then hangs up like, what the hell's going on? It's like, god damn it, I just wanted to have sex all day, and instead, now this shit's going down. But
it's like, White was like the top of the ladder, you know?
Yeah. And then when he finally finds out that the money's gone and that she's got it, and he's chasing her, when that guy sees him and he's like, I'll kill her! James is like, allow me. I'm like, whoa, dude, you spun real quick on that. Like, he like told this chick he loved her two scenes ago when they were on the beach. And she was like, yeah. You love me? Like, it was like she was shocked that someone could love her. I mean, Ava Green, dude, so, so hot. Holy crap. Yeah. Well, dude, like that whole scene where they meet on the train and they're like fencing with each other, like intellectually fencing, but basically it's like it's mental foreplay. Like that whole time you're like, oh, they're gonna fuck hard. They're gonna fuck hard, fuck long. And then, but no one expected Bond to catch feelings. You know what I mean? It was like,
is there still that curse? Like, did Eva Green ever do anything after? Because apparently Bond girls never do anything after.
Did Eva?
I don't watch movies, don't. Yeah.
Penny Dreadful is her show.
Penny Dreadful, that's her?
Yeah, it's her and Penny Dreadful. She's also in the second Sin City movie, A Dame to Die For. Yeah, she's not, like, naked the entire time in that movie.
Not a medicine woman. Like, no other Bond girl really made anything. And that's why it was a big thing when Halle Berry was a Bond girl, because she was already a star.
Yeah. And that whole series of Brosnan ones, it was like Halle Berry, Denise Richards.
Right, because, you know, they didn't want, there was a Bond curse.
Yeah, well, the old ones also were like, well, one of them turned out to have been a transgender, I think, too. There's like a famous, like, one of the James Bond chicks. It's like, oh, yeah, that was just post-op when she made that movie. Everyone's like, whoa, what? And I think it was during the Roger Moore era. I'm not even going to dignify it by telling you people the details. Go Google that shit if you're sick enough to need to know. But I just threw it out there as some fun trivia, I guess. Not so fun for the people involved. But fuck it, it made the rounds. I'm not the one who released it. I just read it, and that's what we do here. And then we have the most video game-esque sequence in the movie, I think, where, like, literally the timer on all the action becomes the fact that a entire house in Venice is sinking, because Bond's first move was, this is a thing in a city that's floating. To make sure that you keep the house afloat while you're working on it, they have these giant air...
That house is probably like 800 years old, too.
Yeah, and it's like these giant air balloons that are kind of like keeping it afloat. And like they're like, you know, they're using her as a human shield. They're shooting at him. They've got the money. And he's trying to chase them. And the first thing he does is he walks in, he shoots one. And the whole fucking house starts shaking and like... basically sinking into the water. Now, she gets locked in an elevator, one of those old-timey wireframe elevators that are just in the open construction zone here. So that kind of immediately is a bad sign. And, I'm sorry, what was that?
Shitty way to die by drowning.
But it was all like she kind of did it herself, you know?
100%. I would have shot myself in the eye.
Yeah. She's just like, because now that she knows that Bond knows that she double-crossed him, it's sort of like, I think she was so afraid of how she betrayed him that she... What?
She loved him. She was only doing it because they kidnapped and killed or whatever. Her, I don't know if they killed her her husband, right? Her boyfriend.
It was her boyfriend, which I'm just like, all right, how much do you like the boyfriend? But at the same time, I guess you can't let him just get killed. But yeah, so yeah, she had somebody. And that was what – she was wearing that necklace. And I forget, it was an Algerian love rope.
The boyfriend was Algerian. It was a Lebanese jewel.
Yeah, and when he say when he write,
I should do podcasts always right after.
Fuck
a while.
Yeah, man, that's the whole thing. Oh wow, preparing makes it easier to do. Look at that.
Just watch it; it's fresh in my mind. You know what I mean?
I'm just saying, like it's method anyway. But he mentioned like, oh yeah, you know that's I know what kind of necklace that is. That's an Algerian love rope. You know, somebody who really cares about you gave that to you. And she was like, oh really? I just thought it would like she made it look like she didn't know that it was that important. Which was kind of crazy. Like, when you find out that part, it's like a very heartbreaking end. And instead of leaving us there to be all pissed off, what do? they give us this awesome setup for whatever the next movie is going to be, Quantum of Solace, where it's like we see Mr. White, who is this guy who, like, we've seen at all these key moments. He was there with the warlord in the beginning. He's just a guy in a suit. He's the guy he was at other points throughout, but he's the one who winds up shooting Le Chiffre. He's pulling up to this palatial estate somewhere.
Oh, it's the one that shot Le Chiffre. You told me it was the guy. Okay, I think it was the henchman that shot Le Chiffre. I don't know.
No, the henchman. He was one of Le Chiffre's henchmen, the guy with the sunglass, the guy with the one.
Mr. White wasn't the guy that actually shot Le Chiffre.
Yes, he is. Mr. White is the guy
he went that dirty.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, yeah, it shows that this aid, whatever this group is, no matter who you're dealing with, there's somebody that could kill you. You know, like even if it's this rickety old guy, not that he was a rickety old guy. He was just like an older gentleman that throughout the entire time you see him any other time throughout the movie, you don't expect him to just pull out a silenced pistol and start capping people. He's just there like, he's the guy that you expect to be like, oh, you didn't do that thing? Fine. And then he pulls out a phone and says, we have a problem. And then all of a sudden a gunship shows up and kills people. You don't expect him to be the guy doing the shit himself. And so here
Quantum of Solace is a standalone movie. It doesn't continue from this
It one. Does.
Same, like...
All of them connect. The Bond, the Daniel Craig Bond movies are all connected.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know, and I don't know if that's a spoiler alert out there to anybody else. But
he's dead, though. He's not in Quantum of Solace.
He's in the beginning of Quantum of Solace. Like
the first scene of Quantum of Solace, it's like, I'm Bond, James Bond.
Well, no, like he has dialogue, dude. He's in the movie. But
this movie ends with pretty much Bond about to kill Mr. White.
No, he says we have to talk, and. Sorry.
Bond. Oh, he does? Okay.
He says, Mr. White, I was trying to set it up, Mr. White's car is pulling up to this house, this palatial estate, and he gets out of his car and he's just kind of like looking out on the river in this whole like, I'm satisfied with myself.
Bond shoots him in the leg.
Well, he gets a phone call, and when he answers the phone, the guy says, Mr. White, and he says, who's this? And he goes, we need to talk. And then Bond shoots him in the leg, and he's crawling.
We still need to talk.
And then when he gets up to the top of the stairs, he says, who are you? And he goes, Bond. Or he goes, the name's Bond. James Bond. And
oh,
then,
I thought he was going to shoot him in the head right after that.
Yeah, no, he's pissed, because he, like, as much as he was trying to be hard about the fact that, like, because even when he's talking to M after she died and he couldn't save her, which, I gotta say, there's a moment in that is a little fucking stupid. Because it's like, he dives into the water, the whole house is sinking, her elevator is now underwater. He dives in and he's trying to open the gate. We already saw her lock the gate. She does this crazy thing where she rubs the back of his hand against her face and then, like, kisses his fingers and says goodbye and then pushes herself away and just blows all the air out of her lungs. So she basically drowns herself. And then all of a sudden, now, with one kick, he gets the fucking gate open. And I'm like, dude, why did you not do that first? Like, this is kind of stupid.
Maybe he was loosening it. And then, you know, that's when they're, like, trying to get the jar open. Then I come over.
Yeah, all that last kick, man. If only I'd done that sooner. And he gives up on the seat.
I think you need to watch some Horton Near to Who, man. It's that little who that does it sometimes.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know if I've watched it once.
Those are the kind of movies that I watch now, okay?
Well, you know, obviously you're picking something up from them. They have something out there for you to pick up. And he, you know, he kind of gives up pretty quick on the CPR there, too. But, like...
Yeah, she was dead, though.
This is, like, I think also a replacement for an original Bond thing, which I don't know if it happens in Doctor No. Probably you would know more than I would because I never saw that one. But I think James Bond as the character is supposedly married, but he's only married for like a day or two because then she gets killed. And so after that, it's like, that's why he's this crazy womanizing, like...
Maybe she's like a double agent. They make fun of that in Austin Powers. And he marries Elizabeth early. And she's like,
oh, true, yeah. But it's like, whatever it is she winds up not...
I know it was actually the one with the famous scene where he's, like, tied up and the laser is going to, like, get his nuts there when he's lying down.
No, that's Goldfinger.
That's Goldfinger? Okay. Goldfinger's my favorite one ever, I remember.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Moonraker's
awesome.
That's what's going to start the super race on the moon. Thunderball is great, and that actually won Best Special Effects Academy Award style.
I remember that with the jetpack.
Like, It was like 7 6 years. Yeah, because of a jetpack.
That's also
guy, and I just stopped watching movies, man. I'm in love with this movie I saw. Favorite Bond movie's fine. It's the newest, most technology. I don't give a fuck.
Well, they're only.
Here's Brosnan one.
They're supposedly everyone keeps getting better. Although, I mean, I did see Quantum of Solace, the next one I saw in the theater. And I was not impressed at all. In fact, it put me back off of the James Bond movies.
Have you seen it ever again since then?
No. So I'm really excited to watch
it. You were just like, is it possible you were tired? You know what I mean?
I was on a date, and it wasn't going well.
So, you should have, like, cut a hole in the bottom of the popcorn, if you know what I'm saying.
I should have done that. But it was also, too, because Quantum of Solace was directed by Paul Greengrass, who directed the second... the second Bourne movie. He actually directed the second and third Bourne movies. And it's like his style kind of sucks. Like when there's action, like a fist fight, or he gets so close and shakes the fucking camera.
I noticed that in Bourne movies, yeah.
And you're just like, God damn it. That's why the first one's the best. That fight scene in the first movie in his apartment is awesome. And that's Doug Liman. That's the guy who directed fucking Live, Die, Repeat, or as people like me call it, Edge of Tomorrow, the actual title of the movie. So, yeah, the next Bond movie is directed by Paul Greengrass, and that's one of the things I didn't like about Quantum of Solace. But what sucks is I stopped watching after that, and everyone says that the one after that, Skyfall, with Javier Bardem, is supposed to be fucking sick. That's the one with
the... three Daniel Craig movies?
Four.
What's after Skyfall?
Spectre.
That good?
It's supposed to be the best. It's like, and that is what ties off the little encapsulated 4-part story of these James Bond movies.
So pretty much get through Skyfall, and then I'm in the clear. No, like, amazing.
Well, get through Quantum of Solace.
Quantum of Solace, and then
which is the next one. Which, who knows, when we watch it for this, maybe I'll be like, oh shit, what was I thinking? This was pretty good. But, you know, it's like, I don't even think that the bad guy was a name that we would recognize. But when you get to Skyfall, you got people like Javier Bardem. And then when you get to Spectre, you have Christoph Waltz. So it's like, yeah.
Some of his movies. That's like the Quentin Tarantino dude, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The best part of Django Unchained. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, no, sorry, if you know I saw a movie, it's got good reviews. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I was Inglourious Basterds.
He actually was the best part of Inglourious Basterds, is more correct. Yeah. He semi-stole the show in Django as well, but then so did Leo. And I mean, like, dude, Jamie Foxx was fucking amazing.
What's her name? Is with the Italian name, Jamie Foxx's wife. There's an Italian name in the movie. She was also incredible. The woman.
Oh yeah, yeah. What is her name in that movie? The character's name. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'll think about it. You know what? I'll remember it as soon as we're done. As soon as we do stop recording for the night.
Oh, but, Samuel Jackson. Oh, what a good
one. Yeah. Yeah. So.
I'm gonna watch Django now. Okay.
That'll be the next binge, and after the Bond binge is over. But I like.
When we're done here, I think I need a TV show. I've been watching, if you don't mind changing the subject a bit, I've been watching like a lot of subtitled TV shows lately, and I think I'm just gonna watch the OA after this.
Yeah, because sometimes I can't read too much when I'm watching my TV. Like that's when I do so much reading as it is while I'm.
Claude, we're similar people. I'm going to give you some shows after, and we'll talk. After.
Word, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm kind of stoked to watch Quantum of Solace again, but I'm definitely stoked to get Skyfall in, because here's the thing. I'm actually going to run over to Target tomorrow, because I bought myself Casino Royale on Blu-ray for Christmas this year.
I love how you still buy Blu-rays. I love it.
Oh, dude, my Blu-ray library is still healthily growing, because now they're cheap again. You know what I mean? Like, when DVDs were expensive when they came out, and then they... Oh, really?
Went to Best Buy in Canada, okay, and I'm looking, and you have to remember, like, you'd think no one buys DVDs or Blu-rays anymore, right? And I'm looking at, like, certain movies, like, $28.99, you know, that's probably, like, $12 for you. I'm thinking, like, people are still buying this for $30, you know?
Well, no,
I mean?
That's true. You know, you're, like, the week it comes out, like, I remember when Batman Superman first came out, the extended cut. I mean, actually, I paid $25 for Suicide Squad not too long ago, 2 weeks.
Right? Suicide Squad?
No, it was fucking horrible. I just bought it because I hadn't seen it, and I heard good stuff about it, so I'm like, oh, fuck it, let me see what
Superman was boring as crap.
Batman, Superman, yeah, so there you go. Like, DC is kind of fucking up, but I'm a completist, so I already had Man of Steel. So I was like, well, I'm going to get Batman, Superman. I'm like, well, I might as well get Suicide Squad, so I just keep the fucking collection. But they also had Casino Royale for $5 on Blu-ray. Quantum of Solace for $5 on Blu-ray. Skyfall for $5 on Blu-ray. The only one that was still expensive was Spectre, which was $10. But I didn't, like, I purposely didn't buy Quantum of Solace. I was just like, fuck that. So now I gotta go back and buy that so that we can complete the Bond binge.
$35 now.
Fuck that. No, it won't be. There's no way. Because those are the ones that they're trying to get rid of. You know what I mean? That's why they mark them down to like $5. They're like, get these fucking DVDs off our shelves. So I will go relieve them of a copy of Quantum of Solace. So
in our building in Canada, we have a. It started off as a music store, HMV, but it evolved into a movie. Now it's like a place where you buy Doctor Who t-shirts and like swag.
Uh-huh.
They're about to like all close. It's sort of like an, you know, FYE. What you
yeah,
said.
Yeah.
I think, I'm sure FYE started off with just music, right?
Yeah, well, FYE, I think, used to be another chain, but yeah, it was like Record Town or something like
right,
that.
Right, exactly. So HMV had to evolve, so it like became like, I bought a Doctor Who belt there.
Yeah.
Like a seatbelt belt. Very cool. Really cool. And they're all going out of business, so I hope it's not like before I get back from New Mexico, because I'm sure there's going to be like liquidations and like so overpriced the stuff there, you know?
Yeah, but you could like, probably get, that's where you'll get your $5 Blu-ray of like Casino Royale.
For ChristmasCon, my wife bought me like a plush pillow with like a, see my like police box shirt?
Uh-huh.
A pillow like that, and that was like $29 for like a, you know what I mean? It's like overpriced crap.
Well, that's funny. That's, I'm glad to hear that's overpriced, because for way less than that, people could get throw pillows for Hollow Nine on our Redbubble store.
The
so
with my,
I mean, I've, well, I'm sorry.
We saw some of my face.
We could put your face on one. I'm sure if people write in to hollow9podcast@gmail.com.
You, like, drool on my face while you're sleeping?
Let people know, do you want a pillow of Johnny Moe's face? We'll make it happen. But
I'll even, like, open my mouth. I'll be like, and like, put something on my mouth if you want.
There you go. We'll make it really weird.
And we'll ever buy this pillow now.
We'll make it really, really weird. Just like we made our podcast for the first episode of the Bond Binge. Just got really, really weird in here. But we have a lot of people said if they had gotten notice more than a day in advance, they would have been able to be here with us. So I have a feeling the Bond Binge is going to attract some guests and some friends. So we will probably have some other people joining us as we go further into the journey here, as we bring What Am I Watching into the 2017 realm of existence. Trying to survive the darkness approaching our world here. And it's only held in check by people like James Bond out there saving the world from total annihilation from people like Le Chiffre. So join us, won't you?
I don't know. Wouldn't like James Bond, like wouldn't MI6 be the bad guys?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. We're finding that out now. But at the time that James Bond was created and at the time that this movie was released, we were still in the blissfully ignorant, sweet nothing that was the American dream. And we were totally thinking, hey, all these government people actually are like the Ethan Hunt, you know, like that's America's answer to James Bond. And we all automatically assume, oh yeah, see, they're stopping some crazy guy from releasing a virus that would just flesh eat everybody in New York. Or, oh hey, look, they're stopping this guy who's going to nuke the entire planet from space. But now we are like, oh no, they are the guys nuking us from space. They're both sides. Got it. Okay. Understood. Now it's all a big psyop. So I guess that's how it was working. We all thought he was a good guy this whole time. But for those of you who still do and are not on board with all this Illuminati talk, I'm sure you will not be interested in our forthcoming conspiracy podcast. But those of you who are, be on the lookout for that. Those of you who have not yet been turned away by our awkward ending here, though, please join us again when we come back to talk about Quantum of Solace and episode 2 of the Bond Binge. Otherwise known as episode 22, I believe, of What Am I Watching? So, signing off from MI6 headquarters, I'm Dave the Clone.
Johnny Moe.
And, What Am I Watching? You've been listening to the Hollow 9 Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. Follow us on Twitter at Hollow9Cast. That's Hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, cast. Email us at Hollow9Podcast@gmail.com. Or find us at our home site, Hollow9.podomatic.com. Be sure to check out our affiliate, FangirlZone.com. Find us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Join in the fun. Hollow9. I think that was a good podcast, dude.
Yeah, it's like I always make it awkward at one point, man. I don't know why I do that shit, man. I'm just like, fuck.
No, fuck it. It's just it goes in directions where I'm like, well, now how do I bring that back? Yeah.
I don't know, my mind, I have a weird mind, man. I have an issue, that one.
Well, you know what? You want to hear something weird? And I meant to say this during the podcast. Maybe I'll have to put this in a Lone Gunman or something. But when I was watching Quantum of Solace, not Quantum of Solace, when I was watching Casino Royale, you know the part where Bond is having a heart attack from being poisoned, and he has this thing that he plugs into his wrist, and it like connects to his cell phone, and it basically beams it. It's vital signs and like a blood scan, because like they're trying to figure out what poison he's got, and like we're cutting back and forth between Bond in a car and a whole office full of people at MI6 who are like his support team. And all I kept thinking, even the first time I watched this, I'm going, you know what's funny about this? All those actors in this scene, they never get to meet Daniel Craig. They never get to meet any of the big actors for James Bond. They literally are like, okay, you guys are going to be in the new James Bond movie starring Daniel Craig. You guys have this whole scene where Daniel Craig is out in the field and he's dying. You're going to save him. And they're like, cool, we're going to work with Daniel Craig. Well, no. All your stuff is going to be shot in here in one day, and someone's going to be yelling Daniel
Craig. I'm sure.
What?
They had like a cast party, I'm sure.
Oh, I don't know though. Like, if you're only in that scene.
Eight roles, come on, they were bigger than extras, you know?
Yeah, but they're only in one scene.
What's weird about that scene, like, he's pushing the red button, and it's like the red plug wasn't plugged in. Did someone fuck with it, or he just.
He knocked it out going to get the blue combi pen.
Okay. I got another scene where he would have died if she didn't go.
Right, right. And the thing is, like, I feel like because that one guy who's like, Bond, take the blue combi pen, put it in your neck, mid vein. I'm like, see, this guy's pushing. He's like, this is his moment in the sun. And it's like, you still didn't even get to meet Daniel Craig. Like, I feel like it's so weird how, like, they're, like, I could just imagine what they're being told, like, while they're on, like, on set. Like, it's like, okay, run over and go. And they're like, Bond, take the pen, inject it neck, put it mid vein. It'll counteract the digitalis. They're like, okay, Bond does it. He says, blah, 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 blah. Good work, Bond. And it's like, all right, good cut. Thank you, guys.
Those movies are made, so like they're not even filming those scenes at the same time.
Right, yeah, and it's like, and then like a month later or like 2 months earlier in Montenegro, what's his name is in a car, and they're like, okay, and sit down, and you're gonna put the thing in your wrist, and here we go, action. And he goes, he puts the thing in his wrist, and like, and they say to you, all right, don't say anything. You're gonna be dead in 2 minutes. You know, just listen to me, or you'll save your life. And he goes, and he says his line back, like, I'm all ears. It's like, okay, and now they say this to you, and push the button, all right, and you see the thing is on there, okay, good, cut, thanks, we're going to lunch, you know what I mean? It's like, those things are all shot so disparately, and not even, like, it's very much like you don't want to see how, like, the sausage is made. Well, like, if you really don't want to lose the magic of what, like, a movie scene is, watching it unfold and just be like, oh, this is really happening, don't ever watch a behind the scenes, and don't ever go on set of a movie, because you'll just be like, oh my god, like, there isn't even the music isn't even playing while this is happening.